Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest is Judith Barry Baker, and she's going to be at a conference in Dallas, and some of the speakers, well, there's quite a few speakers, but it is from November 17th through the 19th at the Crown Plaza Hotel in Dealey Plaza. $110, you can register at jfkdallasconference.com, and some of the speakers will include, well, Judith, of course, James Fetzer.
We're going to have Robert Tannenbaum and Robert Grodin and Dr. Cyril Wecht and many others, new witnesses as well that haven't spoken before.
Okay.
And it's so nice of you to talk about it. Really appreciate that. People have come from that conference completely energized and just motivated because their eyes get opened. We don't fool around, all right? We tell you the truth, and that's what's important.
Okay. So you were in New Orleans.
And yes, and here's Lee Oswald. Of course, I didn't know who he was, but my grandma was Hungarian. I came from a Hungarian family. When I looked on his hand, he had no ring on his left hand, and so I was angry because my fiancé hadn't written, so I flirted with him, and I had dropped a newspaper. He picked it up, and I talked back in Russian because I thought that would pique his interest. So I said, Karasha tovarish, like that, and well done, comrade, okay? And you don't call people comrade in New Orleans, you know what I mean? And he looked at me and said, talked right back to me in Russian and said, it's not wise to speak Russian in New Orleans. I was shocked. I had never had anybody talk back to me because how many people do you know who talk Russian? So, I mean, and I wasn't that good in it. I mean, I had a terrible accent. He had perfect. So I was intrigued, and he said, I'll walk you to where you're going. Oh, you're going to the Y? He said, I just arrived the day before and from Dallas, Fort Worth area. And he said he left his wife behind. Then I saw the ring on his right hand. And this is the shocking part. And I've been telling people this in the last few interviews. It's because it's really important. Today, if you knew someone, you read about it in a paper, and say in 2014, that this man went to North Korea, and he's in the paper saying, I renounce my citizenship, and if I see anybody wearing an American uniform, I will attack them and try to kill them, all right? And I'm going to give all the secrets that I've been told about the missile programs that I was working on that could shoot down North Korean missiles. And that man then, 30 months later, say today, would return from North Korea. Would you find him walking on the streets without having been arrested?
Probably. I mean, to be quite honest.
You know, he would be considered a traitor for saying he's given up the secret. So look what they've done to just somebody who's just, for example, just given away a classified document recently. This poor woman is going to go to prison for it. So we're talking about Lee Oswald. When I saw that he had been in the Soviet Union for 30 months and was walking around a free man, because I said I knew this spy, Knut Mikkelsen, and others, I knew he would not have been allowed to do so if he were a real spy. I mean, a real, danger in our country. He was a hero. I knew that immediately. And I was so impressed. So right away, my heart's going pitter-patter. You know, my goodness, look who this is. And he was very humble about it. By the way, a lot of people, the CIA and FBI did a great job of interviewing all kinds of people. You'll see a huge stack of these interviews in the 26 volumes. Over and over again, it says, I didn't know him. I did not recognize him. I have no idea who this is. So interview people like me who loved him and knew him. And did you know his own brother, that is John Pick, his half-brother, People tried to go to Lee Oswald's funeral, and they only let in his brother who bought the coffin and his wife and mother. They blocked everybody out, and then they said, look, nobody cares about him. He's a loner. And a, you know, if he had gone to trial, we would have stood up for him. I would have. As it was, they shot him in front of 70 police officers, and we had the files come out a few days ago saying, a couple of days ago now, saying that the FBI had called and warned the Dallas police not to bring him out like that and, you know, protect him. The last thing they did is protect him. They didn't do a thing. They didn't have any guns drawn, and they marched Lee Oswald out between two rows of reporters. No police to guard him or anything. So that's what they did to him. They got rid of him because he never would have gone to trial. He would never have been indicted by a grand jury. We would have stuck up for him. We would have testified as to who he really was. So they had to kill him.
Right. Yeah. I shared some of that information before you came on the air. And that they had foreknowledge that this was going to happen, and yet they still allowed him to be brought down into that area where he could be shot. And also the fact that Jack really had all of these connections to the mafia. So go ahead.
Well, it's not what just the mafia. You have to, you know, remember that the mafia and the CIA were working together at this time to try to kill Castro. Lee's mother had been dating at one time the driver of Carlos Marcello. I mean, that was Sam Termini. And on top of that, Lee's uncle was a bookmaker for Marcello. Before that, he'd been an enforcer on the docks. He was a boxer. And Marcello was taking real good care of him now that he was getting too old for that. Right? And so here's the thing. We're talking about, if you look at the picture closely, that when they bring him out, several things you will notice. One, Captain Fritz, Will Fritz, in the front, suddenly moves off in front and leaves Lee. See, he was walking in front of him. Then all of a sudden he moves away quickly. When the gunfire goes off, you watch and you'll see he's the last to move his head backwards. He doesn't respond to the gunshot. The other thing is you'll see Jim Lavelle, and everybody thinks Jim is such a wonderful guy because he's a pleasant man. He has his hand gripping into Lee's belt. Now, Lee is already handcuffed, and he's also handcuffed to Lavelle, and Lavelle is holding onto the belt, so he can't even move away or anything. He's being held on both sides by both his arms. Fritz has moved away, and in rushes Jack Ruby and shoots him. And I saw it only from the back. I didn't realize that I had met this man. He had been introduced to me as Sparky Rubenstein. It's in my book, Me and Lee. And a lot of things, by the way, have been happening. And maybe this is why I'm getting so many interviews. A number of things that I've written about in Me and Lee weren't substantiated by any documents. And now these documents have come out, showing that I was speaking. For example, Jack Ruby. Everybody said he was a sleazy nightclub owner, and, you know, he wasn't very important, just a little guy in the mafia, and, you know, that everybody could push around and make him shoot Lee and so on. Well, in my book, on page 108, you'll read that the strippers that I had become friends with told me that, yes, they also said he was homosexual. Well, he was bisexual, not just that, you know, just not with men. So in my book, I mentioned how these strippers said they had to sleep with Jack Ruby if they wanted to get ahead, and that if he thought he liked them enough, they might end up that he'll take them to Las Vegas, and then they could make a name for themselves in the big time in Las Vegas. You wouldn't believe the flack I got, because everybody said, you know, Jack Ruby, huh? Are you kidding? He's just nobody. He couldn't do that. So now comes this document in July that says he was at the Tropicana Motel and he had put his name down there with his stripper, you know, and they were Mr. and Mrs. Rubin, and they gave them a Rolls Royce to drive around in. Yes, a Rolls Royce. This was 8 days before the assassination. So Jack Ruby, just as I said, not only was not just a homosexual, but he slept with his girls, big time. And he had influence in Las Vegas, or he wouldn't be riding around in a Rolls Royce at the company's, trying to. It said in there they were trying to be very nice to him. Okay? That's what it said in this release document. Oh, and there are others. So I'm just saying, you'll get the truth in the book, Me and Lee. It was written with blood, sweat, and tears.
That is amazing, too, that the one official moved out of the way and didn't respond with the gunshot.
He does not. The others turned their heads right away. He's the last to do so. And when you do it in slow motion, it's obvious, you know, if you slow down the film or watch it over and over. And it's heartbreaking, too, that when they loaded him, first they put him in a small room for about 4 or 5 minutes. A lot of people don't know that.
Why did they do that?
Well, we have records that show that they were pushing on him and trying to get him to confess before he died that he killed Kennedy, and he shook his head. No. A lot of people say that when he came out of there and they have him on a gurney and they're going to put him in the ambulance, that he was unconscious. This is not true. You can see in one of the photos, his fist is clenched. You cannot clench your fist if you're unconscious. Okay? So he was in pain. He was clenching his fist. This is awfully important. They put him in the ambulance, and who do you think was riding with him? Jim LaVell and an FBI guy now. Is that the right people to have with somebody who's partly wounded?
Wow.
No, they got in with him, and they said the jailer was an intern. He got in there and pumped on his chest to give him artificial respiration. When you have a gunshot,
that's not a good thing. This causes
terrible bleeding, internal bleeding. On top of this, we have the records that showed that they had oxygen on board and did not give him any. They had Ringer solution, lactate solution on board.
Now, where was he shot?
And they didn't give him any.
Where was he shot? Where was the entry?
Just below the rib. It's what they call they call that the Jesus shot, that some of the mafia do. When they respect somebody, if they don't like somebody, they'll shoot them right in the face to disfigure them, right? But they respected him. Say his family was connected with mafia. And they shoot him where Christ was struck, you see, with the lance. That's the idea. And, yeah, he used a dumb bullet that would travel all around inside, didn't even exit. It just did so much damage inside. They get him there, and they said, oh, we're not prejudiced. But you know what they did? They rolled him into trauma room one. Oh, it just breaks my heart. They rolled him in, and they, uh-oh, we can't do it in here. Why? Kennedy died in this room.
This man is
not allowed to be in the same room. So then they wheel him out. Then they say they didn't have prejudice against him. So then he's lost so much blood. Then the next thing I notice is that they actually take a sample of his blood to test it. You do not take blood out of a guy who's already bleeding to death, even if small sample. You pump them full of O as fast as you can, type O that everybody.
Right.
And they actually went in and took a sample. Then we have a man standing there. He's wearing a gun. Lyndon Johnson calls Dr. McClellan, you know, by the phone and says he wants a deathbed confession from this poor man. Poor Lee. I just get sick thinking about it, because there's no way they could have got a confession out of a man who's fighting for his life like that. The lack of respect for a dying man and what they tried to put him through. We don't know one thing. One person said that he was yelling in the ambulance, stop hurting me.
Now, who reported that?
Well, here's the thing. The ambulance driver knew somebody who knew David Ferry, and David told me this. So David Ferry, he's the person you see in the movie JFK, the one that they murdered.
Right.
You know that poor Dave, again, is my friend. I'm saying poor Dave and poor Mary and all these people I knew that have died. Sometimes it really gets to me. In this case, Dave survived. He's very intelligent, very, very dedicated, and managed to escape getting destroyed. He saved my life. He told me, you have to keep your head down and be a vanilla girl. You can't talk to anybody, and don't let your name get in the paper. I could not go because of my maiden name, Very, it was odd. I could not go to my own mother's, grandmother's grandfather's funeral, excuse me, I get upset. I could not go to my sister's wedding or anything like that. I had to be quiet, and I had to stay quiet for many years until these people were dead.
Now,
and I feel like I have to have revenge now, you know?
Now, you talk about his funeral, that not too many people were able to go to the funeral.
Yeah.
And his brother went because his brother paid for the coffin. And who else went?
His wife.
And his wife.
And baby, and his five-week-old baby. You think he would go and risk all the things they said he did with a five-week-old baby? How can the man that they said shot at General Edwin Wallace, Walker, who Kennedy fired and was an enemy of Kennedy, according to Marina Oswald, you know, and George and Warren Schild, the handler, the CIA guy, these are the only ones, and they said that he had shot at Walker. Now, Walker is the enemy of Kennedy, and yet now they say that he shot at Walker, and then he goes and shoots Kennedy? It's so illogical. He didn't shoot at anybody. And
well,
Marina Oswald said that he planned to go and shoot Nixon, and she locked him in the bathroom so he couldn't. And then they pointed out that, bathroom doors don't lock on the outside. And then she changed it, said she went in the bathroom and tried to struggle with him to keep him.
Oh.
And that didn't work. She's pushing against the door to keep him inside, and on with these lies.
Now, didn't she receive some sort of cash settlement from someone?
Well, let's put it this way. There, a lot of donations came in. I talk about this cash settlement. It was an anonymous check for $25,000. They say they don't know who it came from, but I can tell you who it came from. Lee had hazard pay when he was over there in the USSR in case something happened to him. His family was taken care of. CIA takes care of his own. That check was worth today $240,000.
Okay, so he did work for the CIA, correct?
Of course he did. He told me that he had been trained by the ONI, the Office of Naval Intelligence. The Office of Naval Intelligence, they were the spy trainers. A lot of people don't realize CIA borrowed him. CIA had only been in existence 5 years when Lee joined the Marines. So,
okay.
I mean, it was relatively new, and they were getting their people trained by the ONI, and that Lee was involved with that. He told me a lot about it because, as I said, I knew this spy, so I knew tradecraft talk. I appreciated his spy camera. I appreciated the fact that Lee had a pedometer. Who owned a pedometer back then? Well, they used that to mark off spaces if they bury something, and they had a compass. So you say, you know, 5 paces to the east, and you bury a film or something.
Oh,
and the Minox, yes. And he, on top of that, he had a Hansen timer. He did his own film processing. And that is important because they said the backyard photos, they actually were processed in a store. Lee did his own film processing. On top of that, he had a 15-power telescope. He had so many items. He had penicillin. In other words, if he had to sleep with someone, okay, to get information or whatever, he's not going to get a disease. He's got his penicillin tabs. I mean, he had 400, Pentax 400s. So he has all this spy stuff, and they're acting like, and look at this. He has the FPCC flyers that cost the equivalent of about $75 today to print off. He's not supposed to have a job, and he prints them off, okay? And he's handing them out. Fair Play for Cuba Committee, it says lectures and meetings, okay? Never had a lecture, never held a meeting. The only reason he's passing this out is, and by the way, you see him being filmed passing it out because they were making films. Anybody who was a Latino who took one, Castro was sending in his spies to New Orleans. So we have Lee Oswald.
If he had all of this training and seemed to be a valuable asset to the CIA, why would they set him up as the patsy?
Well, here's the thing. When he came back, Lee told me when he came back to the United States, he found that they were not advancing him in the company. They called it a company. And he realized, he was interviewed, and he said the problem was that he didn't come back in a coffin. So how could they 100% ever trust him, even though he had been trained to resist harsh interrogations and brainwashing? They sent him there. He was so young that really the Soviets were, even though suspicious, of course, of every so-called defector, he was still only 19 years old when he entered the USSR. 4 days later or so, he turns 20. Now, that was just extraordinary that this young, they're trying to call him a loser. I mean, this young man was having a wonderful time with high-paid prostitutes. Actually, they were mad, they were gorgeous geisha girls in Japan that cost the equivalent of $800, you know, a night today, or $1,000.
Why? I don't get why he would
I'll tell you why, because right after World War II, Japan, you know, had ceded to the United States. The United States government was there, but a lot of those Japanese were consorting with the Russians because the Russians, they felt like they were the friends compared to, you know, the U.S. invaders. And so Lee was sent in there to talk to these girls because they were getting information for the CIA, and that was one of his first assignments. And this one girl, he fell in love with her, and she fell in love with him. He took her to the base. So everybody knew that he had been at the Queen Bee with this gorgeous woman, and they're saying, how can he afford her? And how is it that she comes to the base, you know, and is walking around with him during all day long and everything? Well, they had fallen in love. When he was forced to leave her, it just broke his heart. And they say they beat her because she didn't want to sleep with anybody anymore, you know. So these things were going on. He got his training.
Yeah,
and the problem is they couldn't know if they could trust him 100%. So Lee said, it looks like I'm expendable, you know, by both sides. Neither side is going to trust me now.
Now, didn't he also have a spy camera and other things that
This is the Minox. And this is what's funny. We have this man, John McAdams. By the way, he got kicked out of his university for abusing one of the grad students, their reputation. And John McAdams had put out, you can find it online, he's put out a terrible, long essay written by people who never met me, saying things like that the only evidence I have is an ink bottle and a pair of Lee's, get this, shower shoes. I have books full of things. I have witnesses on tape and film who saw me with Lee and knew we were lovers. But at any rate, the reason I'm bringing this up is we have all these people out there who they present Lee Oswald in a certain light, you know. For example, John McAdams saying, just to show you how he messes things up and hires people to write these essays, he said the Parkland doctors were too busy trying to save Kennedy's life to look at the back of his head. So how can they say he had a hole in the back of his head? Now, that's what we have to put up with. So you're going to find a whole lot of information about Lee Oswald that simply isn't correct. So ask away. Ask me the questions. I will give you the answers if I possibly can.
Well, first of all, the whole idea that he was up in the depository, the book depository, and it's logistically not possible for him to have used the gun that they say he used and to have shot Kennedy.
Yeah, and it's not possible for him to have been up there because we have the wonderful work, the girl on the stairs, we have, you know, Victoria Adams, and we have her friend Sandra Stiles. And they were coming down the stairs. We have another lady up there with her door wide open. The stairs are made of wood. Clop, 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 clop. You can hear every sound on those. The stairs also had at every landing a door you had to open that was on a pneumatic hinge. You know, shh, shh. You know how that goes.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody was coming down the stairs with those two girls. And only one was interviewed. We didn't dare interview two because that would be corroborating. They only interviewed Victoria. And then they changed the time when she said she had come down the stairs. So it made it look like she came down later, that she was coming down when the police were coming up, spotting people. We have solid witness that nobody came down those stairs. And the elevators, of course, the power had been turned off. Nobody was using the elevators at all. So there's no way he could have been up there anyway, because he was seen. By the way, with a, they said, a Coke in his hand, you know, walking out the front door. That people had seen him just briefly, but they had seen him on the first floor. Now, here's what the what happened. We have Marion Baker, the policeman, running in. Why did that policeman, how come everybody else ran up the grassy knoll? And I'm not kidding. You look at the films. He's the only one who stops his motorcycle, runs into the book depository. He said it's because he saw pigeons flying off the top of the book depository, okay? He runs in. He runs into Lee's Roy Truly, a guy who's associated, by the way, with the FBI and CIA and everything else. And the, their story was is that on the second floor, they ran into Lee Oswald when he was drinking a Coke up there. That is a fabrication. People, other people saw Lee Oswald, all right, holding a bottle, but it wasn't Coke. Lee didn't, I know at, from personal experience that Lee never would drink a Coca-Cola if there was a Dr. Pepper handy. The Dr. Peppers were all on the first floor in a vending machine. The vending machine on the second floor was a Coke. They tried to put him on the second floor, but they actually ran past him. And there, we have a few other witnesses now about that. They ran past him and went up the stairs. Only later, when they heard about the Coke, they were said, well, he was in the room there. They had an evolving testimony. They don't even mention running into him in their first testimonies. No, they don't. So little by little, you know, they hem him in on the second floor drinking a Coke when Lee drank Dr. Pepper. So, you know, there, it's nice to have a witness who knew him and his habits. That's what I'm saying. Because I can cut right through these fake testimonies. You know, I know when they're faking it. He would never choose a Coke over a Dr. Pepper. Just so.
Now, was he involved in tipping off the Secret Service about the Chicago assassination plot?
Yes, he did that. Now, I wasn't aware that the name of the city was Chicago. In 1999, long before Abraham Bolden and James Douglas came out with their information, long before that, I had the opportunity to tell Jim Mars and others that Lee Oswald told me. He said, these were his words. He said, I believe I saved the president's life about 3 weeks ago. And that was right there at the Chicago incident, you know, near the end of October, early November. And that really has struck me because at the time everybody said, oh, come on, we can understand he might be a patsy or he doesn't know what he's doing. Please don't go and try and you know, make a hero out of this man, this loner, this, you know, this patsy. But as a matter of fact, Abraham Bolden, God bless him, he should be pardoned because he, you know, he was, right now he's in Chicago himself. He was their Secret Service agent in Chicago. And when the news came through from the Secret Service, the FBI to the Secret Service saying, you're going to have to stand down because Kennedy's not coming. We've had to arrest some people.
Oh, dear. Okay, we're going to a quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. Center. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT-TODAY.
Ladies and gentlemen, J.R. Moore here. As most of you know, my regular listeners, I offer energy cleaners for sale at my website. If you don't have a clue what I'm talking about, go to my website, thelibertyman.com, educate yourself about these marvelous healing devices. We focus on pain mitigation and getting a great night's sleep. Arthritis pain, joint pain, back pain, doesn't matter. Keep in mind, I offer for me to you personally a 30-day money-back guarantee. That's what I do. Energy cleaners, $285, shipping included to American zip codes. You can educate yourself all about the energy cleaner right there at my website, the patent application, the wonderful testimonials. Be sure and check out the factory-made fitted mattress pads to go with the energy cleaner. Now, I offer for me to you personally a 30-day money-back guarantee. That's what I do. I have a toll-free order line, or you can order it right at my website at thelibertyman.com. The toll-free order line is 800-592-9543. I say again, 800-592-9543. Thank you.
Do you or someone you know suffer from chest pain, blood pressure, cholesterol, or irregular heartbeat? Are you looking for a more natural solution to overcome these health challenges? You hear the ads all the time. If this stuff's so good, why doesn't my doctor prescribe it? That's easy. Doctors are not trained in natural medicine. Extendivite Heart Tonic does want you to be as healthy as you can be, and it really works. Take Extendivite for 6 months and your doctor will say, I don't know what you're doing, but don't stop, it's working for you. Get the dependability of Extendivite. Just see how you feel in 6 months. A 2 month supply of either capsules or liquid is only $69.95 plus shipping and handling. Call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Do you know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Judith Ferry Baker. There's a kind of a myth that there were two Oswalds. Could you address that?
I sure will, but first I'd like to say thank you for your knowledge that you have and some very interesting commercials that are intriguing. And I just want to finish what I was saying about...
Sure. Yes, please do.
Abraham Bolden, I had two points. Abraham Bolden came out with his information, I did in 1999. He came out with this information that this informant, the one who saved Kennedy, and so he didn't even go to Chicago, and they arrested these men, that his name was Lee. Now, there aren't that many people in Chicago. I'll just put it this way. It was Lee Oswald, and I had mentioned that. The other thing that I think readers might be interested to know is that in 2003, of course, we had episodes 7, 8, and 9 on the History Channel, the Smoking Guns, The Love Affair. That was the one they did on me. They took all my witnesses out, and they took all the evidence files out. I was talking head, And then there was episode 9, 7, 8, and 9 were banned after being shown only 5 times. They were supposed to show for the next 9 years until the 50th anniversary. So it's really awful. I should say the 40th anniversary, and then it would have been extended. So they banned all that. But you would go to the love affair. You'll hear me saying that Lee Oswald, when he was describing what was going to come down, he called it the big event. Now, I'm good friends. In fact, I love him like a son. That's St. John Hunt. He's the son of E. Howard Hunt, who was famous for Watergate and who came out with his confession, deathbed confession, that the CIA was involved with the Kennedy assassination. And at that time, he said the name of the project was to kill Kennedy, was called the Big Event. So Lee was really deep into this circle. They actually seemed to have lured him in and, you know, drew him in and maybe even let him to report on what was going to happen in Chicago like a dry run so they could, you know, pin him down later. But he had joined an abort team. And I told Jim Mars about that abort team when he was looking at all my evidence files and everything. He was very interested. But when I said that, he sat upright and he said, "What?" Now, you know, Jim Mars has written the afterword to the book Me and Lee, expressing his confidence in me as a witness. And that's why he did his homework with me, I'll tell you. And I'm very grateful. But he was amazed because nobody knew about the support team at the time. He had only just discovered it through talking to just 2 people. And he rattled off some names. He said, "Do you recognize any of these names?" And I stopped him when he said Plumlee. And that name was familiar to me. And that was the man who told Jim Mars about the abort team and said that Lee had joined it. Later, he said that. He is still alive, and he has confirmed that. He went out to Lee Oswald's grave in 2014 and gave Lee a military salute in honor of this man who was so unjustly treated by his own and betrayed by his own CIA and everything. So now, I just wanted to say that. And then now let's go on to the 2 Oswalds. There are many instances where you can see that someone was pretending to be Oswald. I am going to blow people away, I think, when I show you photographs. That's why I want people to come to this conference. It's so important. It's historic. Where people are dying off. I mean, Jim is gone now. Jim Mars died. The last conference he went to where he spoke was ours. Last November. I care so much about him, and we don't have him anymore. People are dying. I'm one of the youngest. I'm going on 75. See, they want us all dead. They're going to hold off these files now another 6 months. Well, they're going to Photoshop them, and they're going to use all kinds of redactions. We haven't gotten very much that's been original. It's just been lucky what we've gotten. But anyway, at the conference, I'm going to be showing you some photographs of an Oswald imposter. Looks just like him. And when you hear his name, it is going to blow you away because people know the name and they don't realize. In fact, I will tell you right now, because when you see the photos, you go to my Facebook page. Come join me on Facebook, J-U-D-Y-T-H, Baker, Judith Baker. I got attacked on Facebook today. Some of my stuff was erased. But we'll be back, and people know this, they see it, and it just makes more people come to the site, you know, when that happens. But the man that looks just like Lee Harvey Oswald happens to be the husband of Ruth Payne, where Marina was staying. She's famous. Ruth Payne is the one that provided all kinds of evidence against Lee Oswald. Michael Payne is a dead ringer for Lee Harvey Oswald. And his family. Oh, my gosh, they're all CIA. Oh, we're going to present all of this information. And some of the information is so stunning that I feel that we could actually get a warrant. And I don't care if they sue me or not. The evidence that we're going to show warrants a warrant. They really did some terrible things to Lee Oswald. And when I explain it all, I think we just hope people don't go after them with pitchforks because of what they have done. So when we talk about imposters, there were there certainly were showing up, and they were saying things like, well, I'd like to shoot that Kennedy, and they're shooting it. They're doing target practice and all this, all during the time that Lee Oswald supposedly is at work at the Texas School Book Depository. We have somebody running around, racing around in a car, and another place where he gets into a truck and says, oh, well, what if the president gets shot, you know? So they're saying all these things. Lee Oswald is, meanwhile, trying to penetrate the group that is going to kill Kennedy. Originally, see, he was pretending to be pro-Castro so he could help ferret out Castro's spies in New Orleans. They had that on the record. They've got photos of him handing out these pamphlets, as I said, and that way they can then say he's a communist and all the rest that they did to him. He had to say on radio that he was a Marxist because that was his job. But how interesting that when he went to Mexico City and he was anxious to the point of despair, he's on record, you know, they're going to kill me. I've got to go to Cuba, blah, blah, blah. And then before his visa expires, he leaves. Well, the biological weapon that he was entrusted with had a short shelf life. And if he couldn't have gotten it into Cuba, he wasn't originally just to hand it off, you see. If he couldn't get into Cuba, it was going to die. That stuff was going to die. So he goes back. He's ordered back to Dallas, even though for like a year, all he'd done is seem to talk about nothing but Castro, 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 you know, kill, you know, I love Castro. It's workers' paradise. This is where I want to, all that. Even after all he had done, all of a sudden, there's not a word left in his mouth. He never mentions Cuba again, never mentions Castro again. All of a sudden, he's inspecting and investigating the ACLU and so on. So they put him on a different project, and it's a clean cut. All of a sudden, this man doesn't even care anymore about Cuba or Castro or any of that. So this thing about imposters, we have one gentleman out there who's looked at the records. I would explain something. Lee Harvey Oswald, on his passports and on all his official documents, his military records, say that he is 5 feet 11 inches tall. But I stood next to him, and I know darn well, and it's in all his civilian records, and it's on his autopsy report, that he was 5 feet 9 inches tall. Now, what happened? Well, CIA puts out different records so that you can't easily identify these people when they're in the United States and they're living a normal, you know, life. If they go on assignment, they have to have a different description. They look, their history will be different to protect their families. We have John Armstrong, who tries to say that one was Harvey and the other was Lee. And for example, he's got this old school teacher that said, oh, I remember him. He was in my homeroom, that boy was. And that boy, everybody called him Harvey, she says. Now, did he have a class with her? No, just homeroom. She taught girls' PE classes, okay? So she only had him one semester. Lee told me from his own mouth that he hated the name of Harvey. And when the kids would yell, if they yelled at him, Harvey, Harvey, he would go after them. You know, he hated, you know, don't you call me Harvey. So what I'm saying is that this school teacher, I'm sure she just heard the kids yelling at him as Harvey and thought his name was Harvey. There are many instances where John Armstrong has done some great work bringing forth information proving, for example, that Lee Oswald never owned that rifle. And I can attest to that. Lee did not own any rifle. That is all made up. We have documents. Very few people will go and put an order form in block letters on one and then the other one do it in cursive. Right. You've got two different kinds of handwriting for them. So anyway, I do go on Facebook. You can go to Harvey and Lee, Truth Mingled with Fiction. And this is where you'll see they have taken photographs of Lee, the real Lee Oswald, and blown him up, made him fat looking, and said that was the Lee, and that Harvey was the skinny one, you know, and all that. If they were so different, why would the CIA ever use them as twins? It's just the whole thing's absurd. And Armstrong says that Harvey came from a Hungarian family and therefore knew Russian fluently. Wait a minute, Mike. Remember I said my grandma? My family is Hungarian. They didn't know a word of Russian except what they had, just a little bit of Russian, like niet or something, and da, you know? they didn't know any Russian fluently. And on top of that, and this is important, he says that Lee had a fake mother, Marguerite, and, you know, and she had him from the time he's 3 years old. She didn't speak any Russian. Do you mean this boy knew fluent Russian the rest of his life as a two-year-old? So there are many, many flaws in Armstrong's theory. And you know what? He made one phone call to me. And when he found out that I did not agree with him, that was the end of it. He had nothing to do with me. He only uses those witnesses that help conform to his theory.
Well, that's what a lot of people do that.
Yes,
what about the Tippit? They decide what's true, and then they find people to confirm their version of the truth. What about the Tippit murder?
Well, here's another example. We have all these, also this thing about that Tippit was, his body was taken to Bethesda, you know, and used to substitute for Kennedy. Please don't believe things like that. Bethesda was a teaching hospital where if a soldier died, often they gave their bodies there to be used, you know, for training and all that. In other words, they had access to all kinds of skulls and all kinds of brains. They would not have used Tippit anyway because he was shot in the front of the head. If they're trying to prove that Lee Oswald shot, you know, from the back, the last kind of skull they would use would be Tippett's, where this shot was in the middle of the forehead. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And on the right side of the cranium. So this is false. We have films showing the open coffin and 1,000 policemen going by Tippett's casket. Now, who was Tippit? Well, we can speculate, but there are a few things that I can tell you about this shooting that everybody should know. Butch Burroughs was the manager of the Texas Theater. The Texas Theater was showing two films. One was War is Hell, and the other one was Cry of Battle. War is Hell was not playing. It was Cry of Battle that started first, by the way, and it started at 20 minutes after. Lee Oswald, this is what Burroughs said, he was the manager. He was at the candy counter there selling popcorn until it was time for him to start the movie. I mean, there were only 7 patrons in that whole 900-seat theater. Think about that, up and down. He says that Lee came down from the balcony. He doesn't know when he came in, and he sold him popcorn at 15 minutes after the hour. Okay, 15 minutes after 1. This is the exact time when they said that Lee Oswald was shooting Tippit 6/10 of a mile away. And that's not the only one. Several people, we have at least 2 witnesses that saw Lee then go and sit next to 3 of the 7 people. Now, how would you like it in a dark theater, have a guy come and sit next to you? And after a while, he moves and goes, sits next to somebody else. And the third person he sat next to was a pregnant woman, and she got up and left, and I don't blame her. All right? In this dark theater, here's what was in his pocket. We have, I have posted on Facebook and other places, we have a, they mentioned the Warren Commission did, and the FBI did, and the police did, that Lee had like $13 and change in his pocket. So, and why is this important? Including 3 of those were pennies, all right? What's going on here? Why would he have gone into the theater without paying, which was the excuse? Somebody who was an imposter did run into the theater. We have a couple of witnesses, including Burroughs, who thought that Lee was taken out the back door. That man was put in a police car. Everybody who saw that person, there were at least 2 or 3 of them, 2 are on record, and they saw him, they thought for years that Lee Oswald was taken out the back way, when it turns out, of course, he was taken out the front way, but there's more, and it's important. We have Lee Oswald, when he's sitting there, when they went through his pockets, and they mentioned his change and his wallet and a box top that was in his, in his pants, oddly, his billfold, they don't mention, because these items, but they're there. They took photographs of them. They're in the record. The police, the Dallas police have them, but they can't be found in the online. I went to the Dallas Public Library, and they have a collection up there of the original photographs and everything that the police now have put online. They didn't put everything online. There you can see 2 $1 bills. But wait a minute, you only see 2 halves. 2 halves. They show the serial numbers of 2 $1 bills, okay, the serial numbers. These bills have been torn in half. Now, here's the way that works, because I told you that I had been taught some trade craft. if he sits to bed down next to somebody and that person is a contact, that person, he waits. If that's the contact, that person will bring out a dollar bill, the other half. He will match it. Lee would then match it one to the other. Okay, and find if that matched, he would then offer his half dollar bill to the other person to confirm. You see, that's how he would do it. So he's moving from place to place there. Now, Lee told me when he was in Minsk, the USSR, that he was in contact with a CIA double agent there, and they did it like this. He was going to see a film of an opera called Pika Dama, the Queen of Spades. And this was a opera that was written by Tchaikovsky from a short story that was written by Pushkin. A nice short story, very peculiar and weird, and involving a card game. And so you have the Queen of Spades. They had a libretto. That is, it showed the table of contents, what the opera was about, you know, and everything. Mm-hmm. And on the front, I hope this isn't boring for you.
Oh, no, no.
Okay. On the front, it always showed the Queen of Spades, but they kept reprinting the libretto. Lee said, he gave me an example. He said, imagine the Queen of Spades on the top, front, you know, on the first page. And then you see a nine hearts, say, and an eight of spades. We said that was either an 89 or a 98. And he would go to that seat. And those seats were upward. You had to push them down. He said in the spring part there, he could pull out a message. So he is doing this in the theater as well. So this is CIA has put Lee there, and they have framed him so he can get arrested by the police there.
Right. Okay, we do have a quick 3-minute break. Could you address the Raleigh call when we come back?
Right.
Okay, we'll be right back.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT-TODAY.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
We are the American Freedom Party. This is the most urgent time in the history of Western civilization. In the year 1900, white people of European descent comprised 35% of the world population. Today it is less than 9% and falling fast. Europe is being overrun with Middle Eastern immigrants, and America's founding stock is rapidly being replaced with third world peoples from around the globe. For the last 50 years, every influential institution in this nation, our schools and universities, our media, our churches and our employers, have promoted policies and principles that teach whites to be ashamed of their great heritage and birthright. We, who in the 1950s, the 1960s, and 1970s were the world's dominant force, are now so afraid of being called racist that we were quailing towards irrelevance and extinction. Join the American Freedom Party today. Reach us at theamericanfreedomparty.us or call us at 701-317-5317. Paid for by the American Freedom Party.
All righty, welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest is Judith Ferry Baker. She's the author of Me and Lee, How I Came to Know, Love, and Lose Lee Harvey Oswald. She also wrote David Ferry, Mafia Pilot, and there's going to be a conference in November, which will be held at the Crown Plaza. Let's see, let me just scroll down here. The Crown Plaza in Dealey Square. And the registration is $110, and you can find more information about it at jfkdallasconference.com. All righty.
We have a new book coming out, Deanna. It's called Kennedy and Oswald, The Big Picture. It puts together all the new information and the information from the best books and also shows the background that made it possible for them to kill Kennedy and to blame it on Lee Oswald.
Wow. Okay, now, could you address, I'm sorry to cut you off, you address the Raleigh call, because we're just running out of time really quickly here.
Oh, well, that was a cover job. Originally, I was supposed to be just working with Dr. Mary Sherman. By the way, she was brutally murdered July 21st, 1964, the day the Warren Commission came to get testimonies in New Orleans. So many murders happened that nobody would speak out. But anyway, we were provided cover jobs. I kept all of my check stubs. And recently, some of Lee's check stubs have come out. They match mine. Because since I'm an artist, some people are saying, oh, you just created these with Photoshop. No, they're the real thing. And people, of course, who meet me, they know that. We had these cover jobs so that we would be able to come and go. And we covered for each other. And Mr. Monahan, my boss, I was a secretary of all things at Riley Coffee Company. And I was blessed that he was a former FBI officer and understood that we had to come and go like that.
Okay. We've got about 1 minute. Is there something that you feel
Today they're trying to use the old accusations that they originally used to try and make it look like Lee Oswald was colluding with the Russians and colluding with the Cubans to kill Kennedy. When
Amazing.
They discarded that back in 1964 as too dangerous that it would cause World War III. Now they, it's now fashionable to be angry at Russia again, even though things had been really nice for a long time. And everybody knows that everybody's looking into everybody's political elections. They're all doing it. They're all trying to get dirt on each other. They make it such a big deal out of this that, they want us to be, at war with Russia again? What is going on?
Well, it's kind of ridiculous.
War makes money, doesn't it? War makes money. That's the bottom line.
It's kind of ironic that they're accusing Russia of interfering with United States politics when the United States military and the United States government has taken out more foreign leaders and replaced more foreign leaders than any other country in the world.
Oh, we're the modern Rome.
Well, thank you so much, Judith, for being on the program. And I hope your Facebook and everything is all back
yes,
up and running.
I apologize for what happened.
Oh, people, no problem.
Conference. Read Me and Lee. And by the way, all the money from this goes to support the conference. I do not take any money for any of this. I never will.
Well, thank you so much.
And God bless and good you now.
Good luck with the conference. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Deanna. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, listeners. Talk to you next week.
Can we talk about something serious for a minute? Your age. Getting old has its perks. But remember, being a few years younger, your hair was thicker, you didn't have so many wrinkles, that extra weight wasn't haunting you, and you just felt better. Well, we can't turn back the clocks and go back 10 or 15 years, but you can start feeling and looking 10 or 15 years younger with Nature's Youth RSF. It's a doctor-formulated daily supplement that helps your body maintain its peak performance and fight the aging process. Imagine sleeping better, looking better, and feeling better. See how Nature's Youth RSF has helped thousands of people just like you at naturesyouth.com. Naturesyouth.com. The holidays are coming. Imagine how it will feel when your family and friends are asking you what you did to look so good. Your secret will be Nature's Youth RSF. It's time to start looking better and feeling better. Learn more and order your Nature's Youth RSF at naturesyouth.com. That's naturesyouth.com.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.